The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
G'day, everyone. Welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast. There's no Doom Patrol comic right now, so we're waiting. That's what this is all about.
Yes. Hello, I'm Mike. I'm also waiting for Doom with Paul. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Facebook. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. And we are also members of the Inner Circle Comics group of awesome podcasts. So check them out.
Fraternity.
Yeah, fraternity. That's a nice one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We have some hazing if you want to join. Anyway, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. You can also contact our show Twitter account, which is sentient and a bit feisty, and that's Wilfred, and he's at WFD Pod.
Yes. So this week, we are heading back to the classic first run of the Doom Patrol from the 60s, and we're going to be taking a look at a bit of an adventure to begin with, and then a budding romance, which leads to a wedding. who doesn't love a wedding?
Yeah. First wedding on the podcast, I believe.
Yes.
Fantastic. But Mike, how was your week in comics?
Yeah, my week was okay. We had the finale of Green Lantern Lost Army, which I kind of won't really miss. We had the start of the new Thor series from Marvel Comics. That was pretty cool. And we had the kickoff of the Vader Down crossover event, crossing over between the main Star Wars comic and the Darth Vader comic. So that was pretty cool. That was
get down, Vader.
Get down and get those rebels and then get back up again. So yeah, it was an okay week. Yeah.
Does he boogie on down or just...
No, he kind of causes rebel spaceships to blow up a lot.
Oh, or it could be about his depression.
Could be. I guess the other exciting comics-related thing was the Jessica Jones show on Netflix.
Ooh.
That was... I felt like one of the cool kids. I was actually, you know, watching it as it just as it launched here in Australia. So
you're a Netflix subscriber now, Mike.
I am. I've finally caught up with part of the rest of the world, and I Netflix and I chill. And by chill, I mean I fall asleep on the lounge watching far too much Netflix.
Wow.
So we're we just finished episode 6 tonight because I sort of watched the first 4, then my wife had to catch up. And so now we're watching them together. Oh, romance. Oh,
true love.
So yeah, we're about halfway there and it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. I'm actually now keen to go and finally watch Daredevil on Netflix as well now. So yeah.
Daredevil is ace, mate. You've got to watch it.
I did see the first 5 minutes of the first episode whilst waiting for Jessica Jones to appear in the menu.
Oh, so you've practically watched all of it.
Well, I've seen a pretty cool fight scene.
Yeah.
And a bit of confession in the church, but eh. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying the Marvel stuff on Netflix. It's pretty damn cool. Yeah.
Excellent.
How about you, Paul? What's been happening in your week?
You'll never believe what I've been reading.
Astro Boy comics.
Oh, close. I've actually been reading manga. So I've been reading a manga called Death Note.
Wow.
That my daughter shoved on me and said, you must read this. It's really good. So Death Note is this demon drops his Death Notebook on Earth, right. Basically. And if you write someone's name in it, they have a heart attack and die.
Right.
In about 30 minutes. But if you can write people's names and how they die. So this teenage boy gets it. And so naturally he starts murdering lots and lots of criminals.
Of course.
And then it ends up as like a cat and mouse with an investigator called L who's trying to track down who has the Death Note book and, you know, how it works. And there's lots of, you know, twists and turns. So it's a bit like... two teenage geniuses have at war with each other and with one with the Death Note and one trying to catch the person with the Death Note. And it's very twisty and turny. It's really good. It's like young Sherlock Holmes versus young evil person. So, yeah.
So, I'm curious, have you ever read any manga before, Paul?
Yeah, I read a bit of Attack on Titan and a few little things like that, okay. A bit of fairy tale and that sort of stuff. You know,
so you're not completely new to it?
Just not completely. Story. Yeah, I like to kind of know what my daughter's reading and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But this is, it's quite good. And I believe they're making it into a movie and literally everyone will be westernized, which will be so good.
Of course they will be. They've got so much whitewash just stored up there in Hollywood, you know. They've got to make use of it somehow. Good God.
Well, you've got to represent the white people. They're so underrepresented in Hollywood.
They really are. They really are, you know. And there's just not enough white man tears in the world. So, you know, we wouldn't want to upset them any further.
No. Other thing I was reading is Journey to the Force Awakens Shattered Empire, which you gave me all the codes for, so I've been checking out those.
And what did you think of that one?
Yeah, this is Greg Rucka writing a couple in different parts of the Rebel Alliance at war with the remnants of the Empire, and it's very good, very enjoyable. I really liked it.
Excellent.
And it has some, you know, little tiny connection to the new movie.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Tiny.
Just enough.
Yeah.
You know, you go, ooh, I know that something from that comic.
Yeah, but I very much enjoyed it. Hey, free comics, I love them. Yeah.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't love free comics?
And also Doctor Strange. Doug Zavisa gave me the first two codes for Doctor Strange, and that was fantastic. I love the art.
This is all new, all different Doctor Strange with a battle axe, is it?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Right. But, yeah, it's mostly him running around his house. Basically, something's coming to wipe out magic and all the magic in the world has gotten super agitated and so he's having to deal with a whole lot of random magic monsters, things.
Ooh, okay.
That, you know, are all out of place and freaking out. And that's very good. Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent Chris Barkalow art and Jason Aaron writing. So, yeah, I might even get the trade of that one day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jeez. Paul reading manga and Marvel. What's going on?
Who am I? What have I done with the real Paul?
Talk about the silly season approaching. Jeez.
Oh, there's a ticking. What's the ticking?
There is a ticking, and it can only be the doom clock. Okay, so the doom clock shows us once again that the last Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run. That was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's been a mere 4 years and 29 weeks since our last Doom Patrol comic book.
Gosh. 29 weeks. Four years. 29 weeks.
Yep. The last appearance of the Doom Patrol, however, was only 15 weeks ago in two different comics. One of those was All-Star Section 8, number 3. We had a cameo of the team in a big background meeting of all the Justice League type heroes. And also Justice League United, number 12. There was a one-panel appearance of the team as Stargirl was getting Robot Man to join her team for the JLU's next mission. This week in Doom Patrol history, however, on sale for $2.50 on November 24th, 2004, with a cover date of 2005, was issue 6 of Doom Patrol Volume 4, otherwise known as Paul's favourite run, the John Byrne era. This issue was written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by Doug Hazelwood, with letters by Jared K. Fletcher and colours by Alex Blayart. And this issue concluded the two-part Robot Wars story, which involved the team infiltrating and exposing an underground robot fighting arena. So, yeah, that was... It had Grudge and Nuts in it, so, you know.
Zany robot fights.
Yeah, it was interesting. We discussed that issue briefly along with the rest of Byrne's run briefly way back in episode 7. So if you want to hear a bit more about our thoughts on John Byrne's run, go check episode 7 out. Yeah, that
awesome.
Was fun. And that's
I'll
it for the
that.
That's it for the Doom Clock this week.
This week on Doomsplaining, we're Well, the main thing is there's a wedding in the second issue we're going to talk about. But to get to that issue, we have to talk about another issue first, which is Doom Patrol Volume 1, Issue 103, which came out on March the 3rd, 1966. But it was cover dated May 1966, according to Mike's World, Amazing World of Comics. 12-cent comic? Sweet. Edited by Murray Boltonoff. And it had two stories in it, and they were both written by Arnold Drake and drawn by Bruno Premiani, so the amazing team that we've grown to love from Volume 1. And the artist is Bob Brown, not the Green Senator. I can't stop adding that.
No, I'm sure all our American listeners love hearing about Bob Brown.
Yeah. And this issue has a flaming menace on the cover towering over the Doom Patrol as they run in terror. Except the chief, who isn't there because he can't run. So, yes, we've got Rita, Larry, and Cliff Steele, a.k.a. Robot Man. And we also have Beast Boy.
Gar, or whatever his name is this week.
Craig.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and the issue opens with a splash page of some action in progress. So we've got the patrol, Rita, Cliff, Larry and Chief, with Mento as well for some stupid reason, and they're shown in a rocket ship talking endlessly about the oxygen escaping through the massive hole made by the flaming naked menace of the Meteor Man, which is also the title of the issue. And there's a cutaway of the ship, so it's sort of like a cross section, so you can see inside and out at the same time, which is cool. And we can see the Meteor Man going through the ship all on his way to space. But then we get a little twist, because usually they just have the splash page and then you get the story that leads up to it. But they keep going with where the splash page started. So we get we show how they ended up in this predicament, and we follow the action in progress for a few more pages. So the air's escaping. They're all talking about it endlessly. Talk, talk, talk. Cliff decides to jam his body into the hole and gets Rita to embiggen her hand and hammer him into place.
Now that's teamwork.
Yeah. And you can see his legs sticking out the side of the rocket ship. Yeah. Larry's doing the pilot thing, and then we get the flashback to how they get there. So the chief has designed a rocket ship. It's what he does. It's not rocket science. and they're going up into space to check out an asteroid or a meteor more correctly, that is coming near Earth. And it's called Operation Shooting Star. And they're taking along a rather sickly guy who's astronomer called Randolph Ormsley. Yes, but he sneezes and coughs, and he's a bit of a hypochondriac, isn't he?
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Ormsby is a sickly man, prone to hay fever and fits of sneezing, which complicates things when he sneezes and opens a cosmic ray collecting ear apparatus too wide and cops an overdose of cosmic rays from the meteor. Those cosmic rays, they're never good in a comic, are they?
No. Just starts a Fantastic Four.
Yeah. And then we see that he busts a hole in the side. He turns into this flaming guy for some reason. Yeah. And everyone tries to stop him, and, you know, Larry's chucking bits of machinery at him, which he basically absorbs. So he's absorbing the iron out of everything. And the whole ship is shaking and everything's opening, and this hatch starts to open, and Mento, who's been brought along because the chief thought it'd be useful, starts slamming on the door. But Beast Boy's been stowed away. So.
That rascally kid. Gosh.
Yeah. So just in time for a lecture from Mento. and then we get the part two of the story, which is called The Blazing Behemoth. Behemoth? Behemoth. That's got moth in it. I'm not very comfortable with that word.
No wonder you're having trouble saying it.
Yeah. So the whole rocket ship is sort of shaking to bits. So... what's the best solution? Beast Boy turns into a mammoth and holds everything shut, including Cliff in place.
Yeah, that's interesting choice, but it seems to have worked.
Yeah. And meanwhile, on the ground, we see some two groovy teenagers going for a bike ride at night.
Far out, man.
Yep, and the Meteor Man lands in front of them, and they're like, oh, wow, look at that. he starts absorbing the iron out of a transmission tower. Which is all good, but then he starts sneezing at them, so there's like globs of hot snot coming at them.
Yeah, it's a bit gross, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the Doom Patrol have caught up and they found that the Meteor Man has been there and everything's burnt and he's written help in a side of a mountain because he's hot. Mm. So the chief immediately comes up with a plan and it's a three-part plan in case it doesn't work. So it's got contingencies. Very good. So the first part of the plan is Larry flies a jet and drops sort of this foam that coats the Meteor Man mm-hmm. and cools him down. But it doesn't work. He heats up and... escapes. Rita is part two of the next plan. She digs a great big hole. Mentos there helping her. They're a little bit flirty in this comic, aren't they?
Just a little bit, yeah. I mean, yeah. He's quite publicly calling her sweetie.
Yeah.
he still can't get used to a girl as feminine and luscious as her digging faster than a steam shovel. That's a weird compliment.
I bet you say that to all the giant girlfriends. Get a room, you two.
Yeah, awkward.
Yeah. So they've dug a great big hole, and the Meteor Man falls in there, and they cover him up, and then they congratulate each other. And he says it's great to see her back to normal, and she says thanks, Sugar Puss. And Cliff says I may be sick, and we all agree with Cliff.
Yes.
But it's not over. The Meteor Man starts melting in the ground and then he bursts out and he's turned the ground into the silicate into glass.
Oh, no.
And then he sneezes and breaks out. So, and then he's on the run. And then it's up to Mento now to save the day. So Mento forces him into the air and he gets a machine from his lab which boosts his power. So he gets Negative Man to bring that to him. And once the Meteor Man is in the air off the ground, he stops absorbing stuff and turns back into the sickly Dr. Ormsley. And Gar turns into a stork with Gar's face, which is creepy as, and yes. brings him back to Earth. And everything's fine. And Rita gives Mento a kiss.
Yes.
And Cliff and Gar both fake vomiting actions.
Yes.
And then we get another part of the story. This is called No Home for a Robot, and it's the saga of when Cliff first became Robot Man and went on the run because he had faulty wiring.
Yeah, he went a bit nuts. Yeah.
He went a bit nuts. But, I mean, we do get to see a bit of Cliff's home life because he goes and sees his brother Randy and hides out with him for a bit. And we see that Cliff is starting to be more heroic, even though he was a bit nuts in the other parts, trashing things. But he sees a robbery in progress and tries to stop it. He's thinking about the robbery and trying to thwart it, chucking motorcycles at cops and things. And yeah, there's lots and lots of action. And Chief is still trying to catch a Robot Man, but the cops are trying to they've formed a task force to get Robot Man. And the chief sabotages the task force so they don't kill Robot Man with their bazookas and things, which is good.
Yeah.
But he's still on the run at the end of it. We're still going on with this endless story.
They did kind of drag out this backstory for Cliff. Quite a few issues. So.
Yeah, but it has great art. I mean, there's some really good stuff with Premiani's art of like the crooks get into this experimental warehouse and they... pull lots of flying tanks and things and lasers.
And they've got jet packs and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
A lot of interesting stuff shown there.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's it for 103. Ooh, I'm so excited. The wedding's coming.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But before that, what did you think of 103 overall?
If I was reading the Doom Patrol back in 1966, I'd be a pretty amazing pre-fetus thing. But, I'd be impressed with this story. I think it's quite fun.
Yeah, it's good fun. There's some really cool Premiani art in this as well.
Yeah.
There's a shot where the chief is, about to give the whole team the plan as to how to stop the Meteor Man. And they're all standing there looking all very, serious and heroic. And that's a really cool panel. Right.
Yep.
Even though Mento and Beast Boy are there, they all look really cool in that shot. So
they do.
Yes. But yeah, it was good fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think so too.
Let's get to the important part of the episode.
Okay.
The thing we're all here for. The thing we've all dressed up for. Prepared for.
I'm wearing a tux tonight. So.
So am I.
That's awesome.
I hope our listeners have dressed up for the occasion.
Mine's a lime green tux. So.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right.
You're not wearing the same one. That would be awkward.
Awkward and uncomfortable. Literally. Okay, so let's go straight ahead And let's get everyone seated and ready for the wedding of the year as we open up Doom Patrol number 104. Cover date of July 1966 and actually going on sale April 19 of that year. Also cover price of 12 cents for 32 pages. God, that's good value. Edited by Murray Boltonoff and again created by the super team of Arnold Drake as writer and Bruno Premiani as the artist, and Bob Brown doing the cover artwork once again, which has got a really cool scene of Rita embiggeting herself as she's fighting twisty-turny Madame Rouge. And just as the priest is saying, "I pronounce you man and wife," Madame Rouge says, "I pronounce you D-E-A-D. Very nice.
That spells dead. Yes.
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
It's not a nice thing to say at anyone's wedding.
No.
So
I object.
Yeah, I object too. So let's get into it. The story is called The Bride of the Doom Patrol. Opens up with Rita going to each of the guys on the team and asking if they'd like to go out and do something nice for the day, but they're all too busy testing gizmos and gadgets and whatnot. You know, Cliff's got new magnetic feet, and Larry's, you know, doing something about all his X-ray build-up, and the chief's looking into a giant science monitor once again. So Rita sits alone, contemplating whether being on the team means she'll never have time to, you know, just be a girl. And if she'll always feel this lonely despite being part of the patrol. And suddenly she starts floating upwards into the air. She has no idea what's going on.
That's unusual.
A little bit odd. It's not one of her known powers. So the patrol give chase and Rita's literally flying over the city. And people can see her and commenting on, you know, "Oh, there goes that weird Doom Patrol lady." Suddenly she realizes she's being pulled by this strange entity being towards the mansion of the fifth richest man in the world, everyone's favorite, Mento. And as she lands, he's proudly showing off this new invention he's created, which transported her to the mansion, and it's based on his amplified powers from his helmet. And
is it a chick magnet?
Well played, sir. Well played. Well, it's a specific chick magnet, because he said he invented it, designed to lift an object weighing precisely 118 pounds. Your weight exactly, Rita. Don't you find that interesting, Glamour Puss? And she's a little bit upset by that. And at that moment, Cliff, Robot Man, bursts through the door. He starts berating Mento, and he destroys the invention. And as the fight heats up between the two guys, Rita actually yells out, "Stop it, Cliff, you'll kill him." And you think, okay, that's right. They were just flirting together on their last adventure. So as Cliff and Larry try to warn Mento off, Rita yells at them, saying that they need to stay out of her affairs, and where she goes and who she sees is her business. And so the patrol, you know, are a bit confused as to what's going on, but they leave Rita and Mento there. And at that point, Mento tries to make a move on Rita, and she actually slaps him in the face. Quite violently.
Knocks his head off.
Yeah, that's how strong it was. She says, "I'll let you know when I want to be kissed, Mr. Dayton. Until then, forget it." So, you know, she's not mucking around. So as the patrol heads back to their headquarters, the guys are slightly confused by Rita's behavior. But thankfully, they gain a distraction in a bank heist that's going on. So they get to foil that. Yay! You know, it's a good distraction for the guys. But they all meet up, the guys and Rita, back at the headquarters. And she tells them off for their behavior once again. And she tells the guys to not speak to her unless they're all on duty together. That's a bit harsh. Oh. She's not happy at all.
Yeah.
And just as this is laid down, another emergency occurs, and they need to work together to get to a cave-in where people have been trapped. And so they're all working together, and that's the only time she'll speak to them. So that night, Rita has met up with Steve at a fancy social event, and he's showing off, you know, juggling a Ming vase on the end of a stick, because that's the kind of guy Steve Dayton is. And he also fends off a drunken guy that comes up and starts insulting Steve as well. So, you know, he's really showing off that he can multitask there. But later when they're alone, Steve tells Rita he's about to leave on business. He's heading off to Greece, but he wants her to join him as his wife. So that's kind of a proposal, I guess. Yeah. But Rita says she won't answer straight away, but she does give him a kiss. And they're actually both surprised that he didn't get a slap that time.
And looking at the kiss, I'd say no tongue.
Yeah, let's just have another look. Yeah, I think you're right there. Yeah, they're very, very, you know, sweet and nice and, you know, well-behaved kiss. Good God. Then the next day, the patrol are still on frosty terms with each other, and they're off on another mission to go and break up a hostage situation. And just as they apprehend the bad guy, Larry jokes that Rita did some nice work, especially for a goofy, lovesick dame with her mind 1,000 miles from here.
Ooh.
How well do you think that went over, Paul?
Ooh, I don't think Rita would like hearing that.
No, I don't think any woman would like hearing that. So Rita then thanks Larry.
No dame would like to hear that.
No crazy dame wants to hear that from a fella. So Rita then thanks Larry for helping her make an important decision. Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yep. I think she's, she's made her mind up. So that night, unsurprisingly, Rita and Steve's wedding is announced in the evening newspaper. And Larry and Cliff, being the pranksters that they are, they devise a scheme to stop the wedding. So they go up to the local telegram service. And they tell the courier to deliver it straight to Rita, to no one else. And make sure it gets there just in time for the wedding. It happens very briefly. It's like the next panel, the wedding's happening. And there's all paparazzi there. The chief is there. He's actually making excuses to Rita as to why Robot Man and Negative Man aren't there. And she's a little bit upset that her teammates didn't make the effort. As she's realizing that, we cut back to the headquarters, and Larry and Cliff realize that they're being a pair of quote-unquote rat finks, and they make it to the wedding just in time to see the telegram being delivered to Rita. And it turns out that the telegram they've written is meant to be from Rita's old film studio. And it kind of implies that the film studio had asked for Steve's help in getting Rita to go back into filmmaking by doing anything to make her happy, including propose.
Ooh.
Which seems like a really weird prank to do.
Yeah. It's totally dickish.
Yeah, it kind of is. But as the telegram's read, Cliff and Larry, they actually confess everything and say that, you know, it was just a prank. They wanted to break up the wedding kind of as a joke. Ha ha. And so even though Steve is innocent and has nothing to do with this at all, Rita calls the wedding off. And she says it's because she knows now who really cares about her, her teammates who are willing to give her up just to see her happy. And so a dejected Mento walks away as the patrol celebrates back at their headquarters.
That makes no sense.
It makes no sense at all. It's like a stupid prank, and it's a little bit confusing, that bit.
Oh, it's so sweet that you guys care about me that you tried to break up my wedding and then told me about it. So the wedding's off.
Yeah, and I'll happily come back. It's a little bit odd. I don't quite get the logic of it. If someone can clue me in as to what I'm missing, please write in. So we continue on with part two of Bride of the Doom Patrol, and news of Rita's rejection of Mento has become public, making, you know, the headlines in all the papers, and the team are all back at the headquarters, and while Rita's...
Wait, I love that Mento's walking the streets in his tux with his Mento helmet on, looking sad.
Yep, he's thinking to himself, what a laugh, I'm the fifth richest man in the world, but I can't have the only thing I ever really wanted, Rita Farr. And he looks so sad.
He does look sad. I actually feel a little bit sorry for him.
Yes, I think people will know I'm no big fan of Mento, but I do feel a bit bad for him after the insane prank that makes no sense that was just pulled on him. As the team are all celebrating back at the headquarters, Rita's actually sitting down in the chair and lamenting that she had no choice but to stick with the team, even though she actually loves Mento and she fears that she's now lost him.
Can I just pause and say how hot she looks sitting in that chair?
Sure. How hot does
she looks
look?
Really hot. She looks very hot sitting in that chair.
She's got legs, I'll give her that.
She's got legs and she knows how to cross them.
So, as we continue on, the chief says what everyone by now is thinking, in that he doesn't understand why Cliff and Larry went to so much trouble to break up the wedding. But now they're kind of still angry with Mento because the wedding didn't go ahead.
There's lots of complex sub-motivations that aren't really being explained in this comic.
Yes. I know sometimes comics expect the readers to do a bit of thinking, but it's really hard to do that when, you know, you're kind of left with weird, twisted logic. Yeah. Anyway, in order to cheer himself up, Mento goes out and creates a new outfit, which looks, you know, all fancy and very flash, with a new red cape and a brand new psychokinetic helmet, which is 5 times more powerful than his original helmet. So what's he do after creating his new outfit? He goes to the Doom Patrol's headquarters and he calls out Larry and Cliff for a fight. Of course.
All right.
You know, that's one way to cheer yourself up. So the fight breaks out and Mento seems to actually be winning with his new increased powers. When Rita runs out, she attempts to intervene and suddenly she loses her sight. She just goes completely blind. And of course, for some reason, she blames Mento for this.
Oh.
So, you know, I'm feeling even, you know, more sorry for Mento. I can't take a trick at the moment. So Rita crashes to the ground. And as the team help her back into the headquarters, Robo-Man runs off to Mento's mansion and starts destroying everything in sight. Completely trashes the place.
Chucking furniture through walls.
Yeah, yeah.
And the butler starts shooting at him with a
that's
shotgun.
Right. The butler's getting out the shotgun and he's shooting at Cliff as he runs off.
Wedding is not going well.
No, it's completely
I don't know
nuts.
About you, but my wedding day went smoother than this.
Oh, look, I think everyone's wedding day went smoother than this. So with broken hearts and broken furniture everywhere, as far as the eye can see, we actually cut away to the dark side of the moon, unexpectedly, where we see Gargawax and the Brain watching a rocket land. And who steps out of this rocket? Madame Rouge. And you're kind of thinking, okay. But we learn that it was actually Madame Rouge who transformed herself into Mento, and with Gargawax's technology, attacked Robot Man and Negative Man in disguise. So it's all the Brotherhood of Evil's fault.
What?
I know. Apparently, Gargawax's plan is that by getting Mento and the Patrol to fight, their mutual massacre of each other will remove the greatest threat to the Brotherhood. They're expecting them to just wipe each other out and leave it clear for the Brotherhood to attack.
At any point, did Rita almost marry Madame Rouge?
It's unclear. I don't think so.
Good.
I don't think so.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, I think you should know what gender of person you marry before you marry them.
That's right. You want complete honesty and everyone to be up front, you know. But yeah, I think somehow it's never shown to us, but Rouge saw Mento's fancy new outfit and that's when she decided to attack, disguised as Mento.
That's why Rita's blind.
How do you figure that?
Did Madame Rouge cause the blindness disguised as Mento? Or?
Well, yes. Well, that's not entirely shown, but it's implied that this new technology she had must have had some effect on her. But what's actually happened is that Chief, with all his gigantic scientific equipment in the headquarters, Chief being Chief, he has cured Rita's temporary blindness, and he discovers that the cause was from an element not found on Earth. So the Chief has twigged that something's not quite right. And as the heroes race to beat the crap out of each other once again, the Brotherhood of Evil fly to Earth, ready to carry out the last stage of their plan once Mento and the Patrol have wiped each other out. And another fight breaks out between the guys. And as Mento thoroughly trounces Cliff and Larry, Rita turns up and she's extremely angry with Mento. So she embiggens her hand and crushes his new helmet and picks him up and throws him into the nearby river because they're all fighting on a bridge. So there goes Steve, you know.
That's awesome art in that.
Oh, God, yes. She, you know, she's full of fury and she's not taking anyone's crap anymore. So as Rita runs to check in on Cliff and Larry, she suddenly gets caught in a trap and she's caught in some weird kind of bag that, you know, won't let her move. This is when Cliff admits that the fight that just broke out then was all a hoax to draw out the real villains, the Brotherhood, who then make their appearance and Gargawax starts blasting at Robot Man's legs. So, you know, everyone take a drink.
The leg's already off, Gargrax. Why are you shooting the leg now that it's already off?
Why not? You know, salt in the wound and all that. So as yet another fight breaks out, Madame Rouge then tries to kill Rita, but the chief turns up in his action chair and he opens up the grappler arm that traps Madame Rouge. And at this point, Monsieur Mallor, who has joined the Brotherhood, is about to attack. Robot Man runs up and intercepts. Somehow Robot Man has grabbed a branch off a nearby tree and made that a replacement leg for his body. So
brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So as it looks like the Brotherhood are about to lose this fight, a rocket comes roaring past and the Brotherhood all latch onto it and they make their escape. So the Brotherhood get away once again. Then once Rita is freed, she goes and rescues Steve from the river, asking his forgiveness for thinking that he could ever hurt her. And this is when Steve proposes again and she exclaims yes. So the wedding does go ahead. It's actually, you know, really Mento this time. They've gotten rid of the bad guys. And there are, it's lovely to see that there are lots of other DC heroes in attendance at the wedding. There's Batman and Wonder Woman and Superman. The Flash is there. The Teen Titans are there. Super Hip is there.
Yep.
Yeah, Super Hip. He was in the Bob Hope comics, for all you young people listening. Yeah. We'll get into Super Hip later.
And all the young people go, who's Bob Hope?
Yeah, oh God, that's a whole nother episode there. So, it's a happy ending, you know, they're married, they're all, you know, everyone's happy, and it's a great wedding. There's a great shot there of Robot Man wearing nothing but his pants and a top hat, which is very fetching. And it's at this point, as they're walking out of the chapel, that Mento says, "That's it, honey girl. We're finally man and wife. Now you can say goodbye to your Doom Patrol days and settle down to..." And it's at this point that another emergency breaks out, and the chief is being told about an emergency bulletin. There's a bomb scare aboard a plane landing at the city airport. And so the team run off to their next mission. And Rita basically says to him, "Yes, dear, I'll do anything you say, but I can't let that plane blow up. See you later." Mento's left there holding the flowers, and that's the end of the issue.
Yay.
So, what a crazy wedding. I like this story a lot because A, the art is great. B, it's so cool to see comic book characters, you know, actually reflect the real world and get married and that sort of thing. But yeah, the logic of Cliff and Larry in them trying to break up the wedding, that was just a big, can't even think of the nice word for it. It just made no sense.
It's bizarre.
It's a big blunder.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a weird stumble in the story. So
one thing I really like about this is there's a bit of scene setting in the middle where it's nothing super heroic at all. And it's just Rita and Steve talking in his convertible in a street. And it's just perfectly drawn, like the tree, you know, the facial expressions. There's some really great acting by the characters that Premiani conveys.
Yes.
And, you know, even everyone at the party before that, you know, they look like people. They look like real people.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Such great art in this. Like even the paparazzi and the crowd at the first failed wedding as well, you know, such cool detail in there. It's such a... And the panels where Mento's walking down the street after the first failed wedding, as you say, in his Mento helmet and his tuxedo. I mean, it looks ridiculous, but it looks really sad as well. And it's a little bit heartbreaking. And I never thought I'd say that about Mento. But yeah, such great art in this. And Rita does look quite fetching throughout the entire issue. So
yeah. No, it's like he went to extra trouble to draw her super, super gorgeous in this one.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I love, I've said this before, when the Doom Patrol get to interact with the rest of the DC universe, I love moments like that. And it's so cool to see, you know, part of the Justice League essentially there at their wedding. That was really cool. And Super Hip made me laugh because we don't really see him again until the Giffen Clark run.
Yeah.
You know, some, oh God, 50 years later almost.
Yeah, Giffen's got a long memory, hasn't he?
Yeah. So Super Hip was, he was a character that appeared in the Bob Hope comics, and he was kind of this nice, quiet young man, but when he got rolled up, he kind of transformed into, I guess, this cool, almost Austin Powers type teen, and his guitar would magically appear, and he'd be just, you know, this rockin' teenager, and he was super hip, which is how he got the name.
So
he appears at the wedding, and then he's never seen ever again, pretty much, unless you track down some of the Bob Hope comics. But I don't think Bob Hope was actually part of DCU continuity
at this
time. So, but yeah. So overall, Paul, what did you think of this issue and the wedding?
It's great fun. Yeah, there's some weird motivations, and it's all complicated by the fact that Madame Rouge is in disguise through some of it, you know, imitating Steve. Like, you know, there's times I think, you know, Rita's thrown Madame Rouge into the river, but she's actually thrown Steve. So it's very, it's quite hard to track down what's happening, but it's a lot of fun. You know, there's no shortage of action and adventure.
Yeah. I think the only low point in this is the prank that Robot Man and Negative Man pull in this, because it makes no sense.
And the outcome of it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I just can't quite get my head around. Well, I can get why they would do it, because they hate Mento, and hey, who, you know, I completely empathize with that. But yeah, the some of the logic behind it, and then, you know, Rita's response to it, like, oh, okay, I like you guys more. And then the next page, he's like, oh, actually, I kind of love Steve and I kind of miss him now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed a very fast-paced issue. But you're right. It's a lot of fun. And there's some great art in it. So.
And at the wedding, I mean, we've got Beast Boy in disguise. So no one recognizes him. And and there's the most middle-aged Batman ever.
Yeah. It's good fun, yeah. And then next time we visit the 60s run, we'll actually see them on their honeymoon. Well, what counts as a honeymoon when you're, you know, adventure types like Elastigirl and Mento. But yeah, that's going to be fun to see as well. So, yeah, so we did it, guys. We survived the wedding. Just
that's fantastic. All right, are you going to try and catch the bouquet?
Okay. Oh, I missed.
I was sitting down, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I'm sure it went to someone more deserving than me. Oh, look, Wonder Woman caught it. She did. Let's get to the mailbag.
Mailbag of Doom. For the question of the week this week, we were asking all our people out there, all the listeners in listener land, what's the best romance in comics? And we have from Martin Gray, and we decided to include his answer this week. Anyway, he said, well, not Maller and the Brain, Bruce Wayne and Silver St. Cloud. It had a beginning and an end with real emotions. And he showed us some art of Neil Adams' Silver St. Cloud, I think, and she's a sexy little number.
Yes, and Batman just, you know, casually stalking in through her window.
Yeah, and Martin Gray pointed out that they have the same wallpaper that Bob Layton gave Tony Stark.
That's a nice touch.
That's obscure trivia.
Thanks, Martin. We heard from Fractures at Fractures, or this week, WT Frack, and he said Batman and Catwoman, and provided some fairly old-school-looking Catwoman art there. With the old purple dress type outfit, yeah.
Hooking up. we heard from Alison the Gentle Nerd, who's at VA Gentle Nerd, and she said Monsieur Mellor and the Brain. So one vote for them.
Nice choice.
And that kicked off a whole discussion on Twitter, didn't it?
There was a lot of discussion about how cool it was to see their romance in, you know, just treated as just a thing. In the comics, whereas, you know, more mainstream comics kind of have that stuff treated not quite as well, shall we say. look, we heard from Frack again, and he said Mento and Rita. Right. Then we heard from Rift at Rift1821, and he said Spidey and Mary Jane. That was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Not marijuana.
No, Mary Jane Watson.
Yeah. Not Spidey hitting the bong.
Oh, look at my webs, man. They're huge. Sorry.
Well, you sound very experienced with drugs there, Mike.
Who else did we hear from, Paul?
We heard from Matt Roberts, Mr. Oberts, and he said Wolverine banging his way through the Marvel U.
Wow. Well, he is the best at what romantic. He does.
Yeah. And what he does is everyone.
Yeah. We heard from a Random Shane at NPR Shane, and he said his best romance was Tony Stark's love of alcohol.
Oh, that is sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, that's touching.
We heard from Karthik Karkarella, who said, I will ponder this. I can't get around this by going straight to Dredd this time. Yes, Judge Dredd is usually his answer for most questions.
Yes. Moby One at Shmoby One said, the romance between Marco and Alana in Saga is pretty damn fine. That's a good choice.
That is a good romance. Yes. Then Cameron Williams at Wasgo, he helped Karthik Karkarella out saying, let me help you out here. This is the best romance in comics. And he showed a picture of Judge Dredd and Batman fighting.
What a bromance. Wow.
Yeah.
We heard from a friend of the show, Ange, Dr. Ange 70 on Twitter. And he said, Lois and Clark are too obvious overall. Supergirl and Brainiac fine. Seems too obvious for me, so I'm going to say Swamp Thing and Abigail Arcane. Now, wasn't that a tortured romance? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
They had some ups and downs.
We heard from Bob Gar Ornelas at Slowmo, and he said Shade and Kathy from Shade the Changing Man, but he does like Brainy and Supergirl, though. Ooh, that Shade and Kathy romance was a rough one in that series.
I've got to admit, I've never read Shade the Changing Man.
Yeah, and Bob Gar also said, I didn't want to answer Stealth and Vril Docs because of the way their relationship started, but hey, I've always liked their dynamics. So that's Vril Docs from the Legion 89 series. Ooh. And their relationship, she raped him a bit.
Oh, geez, okay.
But it was sort of alien hormone stuff, not, you know, yeah.
Anyway, right.
Yeah, move on.
Okay. We heard from Richie O'Hara Beeman at Rickety OB, and he said, aside from the obvious, being Mala and the Brain, John and Susie of Sex Criminals fame and Pietra and Kitty from the X-Men, they're great too. Yeah, they're both good couples there. Yeah.
Wow. And then we heard from superstar comic creator Christopher Sabella, who's at X-Top, friend of the show, clown motel occupant, that sort of thing. And he said, Niles Calder and Chocolate.
Fair call.
Yeah. He knows he's Doom Patrol.
Mm. We heard from Arbad at ArbadF09 on Twitter. He said anything but Cliff and Rita from Burn's Doom Patrol run. Yes, completely agree there. But he did say Maggie and Hope from Love and Rockets. For more conventional take, Scott Summers and Jean Grey from early X Factor, both are long-term relationships. By then, Scott and Jean had passed through a lot, even her dying. That's a lot for a couple to go through. Yeah.
Yeah.
We heard from Carl D. Smith, who's Carl Smith writer, and he said, Cloak and Dagger, especially in my fanfic.
Ooh. Ooh, oh, dear. Possibly a bit saucy. And finally, we heard from Doug Zavisha at D. Zavisha, and he said, best romance in comics, Wally West and Linda Park. No competition. Curse you, DC Comics.
Ooh, throwing out the curse.
Yes.
What about you, Mike?
This is a tough one because there's a lot of options, but I'm going to go for one that really stood out to me this year, and that was Alex and Ada from Image Comics, which is a mini-series about a young man and his female robot companion. And... man, they went through a lot of stuff together, but it was a really touching story and a beautiful comic book, and it was very slowly paced and raised lots of questions about what it means to be in love and in a relationship when one of the people isn't actually human. And I really liked it a lot.
What's the name of the comic with Alex and Ada in it?
It's called Alex and Ada. Featuring Alex and Ada. And also Ada.
And Alex.
And Alex, yes. And that was from Image Comics, Alex and Ada. Yes.
Beautiful.
I may have raved about it a little bit earlier in the year as well. So, well, how about you, Paul? What's a favourite romance of yours?
I have a real soft spot for Ralph and Sue Gibney, the elongated man and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they had some ups and downs too, didn't they?
I'll admit I've not read a lot of their stories, but I'm aware of, some of the downs.
Some of the downs.
Between them. I don't mean to laugh, but yeah.
No, rape and death.
Yeah, that's a bit of a downer. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the DC Universe was doing some good things with the Dibneys, and then we had Flashpoint and everything got derailed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Look, we can just take Carl to it and do fanfic, you know?
Yeah.
And we also had an email sent to the mailbag this week from Ange, at Dr. Ange on Twitter. Dr. Ange, he is a man. And he said, love the last show. I laughed at the name Hot Hands because it was so appropriate. If you look at the letter columns of that book, there was a ton of discussion and suggestions that Scott needed a code name. In fact, I think there was a push for Scorch at one point.
I wish I'd written in with Hot Hands back in the day.
Oh, well, yeah. How could they not go past Hot Hands? Oh, yeah. Fools. Anyway, Ange continues, I'll agree that Byrne Superman stuff was firing on all cylinders in the early years. I think he breathed some new life into a sort of moribund property. This Supergirl in the story was the protoplasm matrix from the Pocket Universe. She was imprinted with Lana's genes and so had her memories and looks when not in her Supergirl form. Because Luther created her in that Pocket Universe where he was a hero and she had strong feelings for him. The Luther she becomes amorous with is not that Lex, who died in the Pocket Universe. It is the evil Lex from the main DC Universe. Still creepy. I took about 8 years for this Supergirl to become a character that I could truly root for. And he signs off, I can't wait to hear about the Mento Rita wedding. So thanks, well, Ange.
Hopefully you did.
Yes, he should have if he's made it this far. So. But yes, thanks again, Ange, and thanks for everyone that wrote in with their responses this week.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's probably it for the Mailbag of Doom.
So that pretty much wraps it up for this episode of Waiting for Doom. If you want to get in touch with us, you can always find us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and you can reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. So, Paul, what's in line for next week's episode?
We're going to do a Doom Patrol story that I'm suspecting not a lot of people know about, but it's that time that James Robinson and Dave Gibbons did a Doom Patrol story.
Ooh.
Dave Gibbons from Watchmen.
Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah, I'll admit this is one that I have not read.
Ooh.
So I'm very excited for it. And do we have a question of the week lined up?
Do we ever? Yes. Yes, we do ever. It's what's the most poetic moment in a comic that you can remember?
Poetic moment.
I'll poignant, think about that. Touching.
Right.
What if something like that?
Limerick.
Everything limerick? With Etrigan.
Right. Okay. Cool. Okay. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. We will catch you again next time.
We will.
See ya.
Bye.
At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
My heart was wrapped up in clover.